the rock in high orbit above Midgardia. The primary command bridge of the rock was a cavernous place, full of faded glory and shadows that had lain undisturbed for 10 millennia. At its heart, a great tiered dais rose, each stone step carved with intricate figures telling the long history of the First Legion. The top of the ziggurat bore a throne of brass and steel, bristling with data ports and hollow screens, vox uplinks and rune banks. There sat Azrael, keeper of the truth, supreme grandmaster of the Dark Angels and all of the Unforgiven. Face set beneath his white cowl, he surveyed the bridge below without expression. Serfs, servitors and data slaves scurried to and fro amidst tiered ranks of cogitator banks and oculus view screens, while menials toiled in the communication pits sunk around the dais, backs bent double, blind to the cold stone columns that rose around them to the distant vaulted ceiling. The air was thick with darting servo skulls and fluttering auto cherubim, their sensors filling the air with the cloying smell of warpbane and other sacred unguents. The rattle and chime of cogitators, the crackle of voxhorns, and the throaty machine cant of the bridge's choir of course chartists echoed back endlessly from the stained crystal flecks of the viewing ports opposite Azrael. The bridge, in all its cold stone majesty, dwarfed even the greatest ships of most other Space Marine chapters. Azrael noted a few of his fellow Adeptus Astartes casting glances up at the highest reaches of the ceiling, swathed in darkness far above. They were assembled around a large, circular hollow chart near the central nave, laid out before Azrael's dais. The chart itself was beaming a grainy green representation of the Fenris system into the smoky air, the orbs representing Midgardia, Fenris, Frostheim, and their attendant moons revolving slowly around the pallid sphere that was the system's sun, the Wolf's Eye. As the briefing began, the display flickered, overlaid by red and blue sigils and arrows that plotted the arrival of the Crusade fleet. It was an impressive undertaking, Azrael thought, a stark reminder of the danger the developing events posed to the Imperium. Normally, a Crusade fleet took far longer to bring together, never mind fully deploy. Azrael recalled the Antarica Crusade, which he had participated in when he had still been a battle brother in Sergeant Nephilim's tactical squad. It had first been approved by the High Lords of Terra 2 centuries before Azrael had even been born. It took 200 years to assemble the full fleet assets, petition the Adeptus Mechanicus and the Knightly Households for support, and divert Space Marine chapters from operations elsewhere. The Crusade's nominal leaders had died and been replaced 3 times over, and entire army groups of the Astra Militarum had been disbanded and recruited afresh before the vanguard of the battle fleet had even left its docks. The force Azrael had brought together was smaller than that of Antarica, but it was still fearsome. Contingents from 14 chapters, 2 Imperial Navy sub-battle fleets and 3 Astra Militarum army groups. Further forces had sworn to assist and were en route, including Titans of the Legio Dominatus. Only a figure of Azrael's considerable standing and experience could have summoned such strength with so little notice. Below him, that strength was exemplified by the 14 Space Marines attending the final operational overview. Among their heraldry, Azrael could see howling griffins and red consuls, the vicious yellow of the Marines Malevolent, the grey battle plate of Shadow Haunters, and the silver of one of his chapter's own successors, the Guardians of the Covenant. Besides those physically present, 2 of the Adeptus Astartes were represented by throbbing blue hololithic displays. Captain Epithus of the Ultramarine 6th Company and Iron Captain Terek of the Iron Hands Clan Company, Harmek. They were both already bound for the world of Frostheim, on the far edge of the system, leading a detachment of the Crusade fleet's might. Interrogator Chaplain Eleazar led the briefing. Azrael had given him the task on the advice of Asmodai. The Master Interrogator Chaplain had been impressed by his apprentice of late, and Azrael knew how difficult it was to earn the favour of the grim Master of Repentance. Even now, he towered like a silent revenant beside Azrael's throne, observing Eleazar without comment. "Midgardia," Eleazar was saying, a gesture highlighting the sphere spinward of the Wolf's Eye. The second largest of the Fenris system's three planets, and the world we are currently entering high orbit above. Its surface was formerly a toxic jungle, classed as a death world. The Midgardian natives lived below the outer crust, in cavernous subterranean hive cities.
The past tense is noted, Brother Chaplain, Terek the Iron Hand said, his voice crackling from the voxhorn built into the hollow display projecting him. What fate has befallen them?
Long-range auger scans indicate the surface of Midgardia has suffered a near-total demonic infestation. Of the situation underground, we have no idea.
Haven't the wolves tried to purge it?
Captain Epithus of the Ultramarines asked, his own hollow form flickering.
With two great companies, including that of Logan Grimnar himself. And what has become of them? Of Grimnar?
We are still collating information from intercepted Vox transmissions and high-yield surface scans, but it seems their counterattack was a complete failure. The great company known as the Iron Wolves are currently evacuating the planet, while the fate of Grimnar and the Champions of Fenris remains unknown. They were last recorded battling the infestation in the caverns below the planet's surface. A murmur passed through the Space Marines. Eleazar pressed on.
Valdar Mani, the Wolf Moon, Fenris's only satellite, he said, indicating the orb slowly circling the white and blue sphere of the Space Wolves' homeworld.
Intelligence reports that a battle barge of the Grey Knight's Third Brotherhood was destroyed in orbit by a Nova cannon sighted near the astropathic beacon known as Long Howl. Whether that was due to the demonic incursion or represents treachery by the Space Wolves is currently unknown, as is Captain Stern's status. Picked footage remotely extracted from Long Howl's databanks shows vessels leaving the battle barge for the moon's domeplex before it was destroyed. If demonic forces have indeed overrun Valdar Mani, it may well be that they are attempting to implicate the wolves in whatever has befallen Stern.
They need hardly try, Captain Vor of the Marines' Malevolent spat. If the stories of the wolves' mutants are to be believed.
That is an accusation that will be further investigated as soon as time allows,
Azrael said. The muttering among the assembled Space Marines died as he spoke, his deep voice carrying easily across the hectic bridge.
Right now, securing the Fenris system against demonic incursion is our foremost priority. Once it has been purged, we shall hold the wolves to account for what they have tried to hide from us, from the Imperium.
The Dark Angel's cold words left a gulf of silence in their wake. After a moment, Eleazar continued. Frostheim, the third and final planet of the Fenris system. It is the site of Morkai's Keep, which was recently seized by heretic forces before being retaken, it seems, by Harald Deathwolf's great company.
What heretic forces? Terek demanded.
We are still gathering intelligence on the matter. Frostheim is orbited by a natural satellite called Svelgard. The moon's surface is dotted with a number of small islands, sites for a powerful orbital defense battery known as the Claws of the World Wolf. These were recently recaptured from a demonic infestation, which appears to be originating from beneath Svelgard's seas.
Are the weapons systems still operational?
Asked Bohemond, captain of the Doom Griffin's fourth company.
As far as we're aware, yes. Brother Captains Epithus and Terek are both en route there with their brethren as we speak, supported by the Imperial Navy's 483rd Obscurus Battlefleet Subdetachment and an Astra Militarum Army Group. They will stabilize the situation.
Both Epithus and Terek's holoforms nodded their confirmation, the motion causing them to flicker.
And if the wolves do not wish to be stabilized?
Vor asked.
Then they shall be taught a long overdue lesson in how to cooperate with their brethren, Eleazar replied. Unnoticed, a smile ghosted across Azrael's lips. He could see why Asmodai favoured the young interrogator chaplain. Besides their presence on the system's three planets and two moons, sector defence data files show that the wolves maintain two Ramillies-class starforts, Eleazar continued, designated Gormanyal and Mjolnir. Contact was lost with both soon after the incursion began. The rest of his words were drowned out by the voice of Azrael's Vox Seneschal, Mendaxis, speaking in the Supreme Grand Master's ear.
Sire, we have just detected a ship signature not registered with the fleet breaking into real space coreward of our position. Initial scans show it was last registered as a private vessel associated with the retinue of Lord Inquisitor Banist de Mornay.
Azrael's expression remained stoic, but his grip tightened fractionally on the skulls carved into his throne's flanks. Beside him, Asmodai, listening to the Vox exchange, turned sharply to look at Azrael.
De Mornay, the Supreme Grand Master thought. So, the old fool yet lived. Of course he'd followed them here. He's hailing us, Mendaxis said.
Accepted, Azrael replied. Throne vid only.
A small screen, framed by the wings of the Aquila, rose from the throne's arm. For a second, the monitor fizzed green with static, before resolving itself into a face Azrael had hoped never to see again. When he had first met Lord Inquisitor de Mornay, the man had been a paragon of imperial strength. Young, iron-jawed, steel-eyed, his red hair cropped close, more accustomed to flak plate than the robes of his ordo. But a century had taken its toll, rejuvenate processes or not. Now the face that occupied the screen was sagging into fat, the jawline more jowl line, one eye roomy with cataracts.
Supreme Grand Master Azrael, said de Mornay,
his deep voice crackling through the voxhorn set below the screen. He was smiling.
I am glad to see you again.
I cannot say the same, Azrael replied.
He didn't have time for the Inquisition's games, especially not the ones that de Mornay loved to play.
Am I interrupting something?
The Crusade fleet is currently preparing to firebomb the surface of Midgardia.
May I ask why, aside from the fact that Midgardia falls under the control of the Vulcar Fenrica? I'm sure your Primarch would be proud, if I recall my progenium history lessons correctly.
The planet has fallen to a demonic incursion.
How do you know?
Augur sweeps, Vox intercepts, strategic analysis data, the visions of my librarians, and the fact that a Space Wolf's great company is currently fleeing the surface.
The champions of Fenris?
No, we believe it to be the Iron Wolves.
But the champions are also on Midgardia, aren't they?
Led by Logan Grimnar himself.
Our Vox transcripts report all contact with him has been lost.
De Mornay was silent for a moment before speaking again.
I would like to request an immediate audience.
Your rosette will do you little good, de Mornay, Azrael warned. I am not some cowering militarum general or docile planetary governor. If you wish to speak, it will be on my terms, not yours.
I see the Sons of the Lion are as cooperative with his holy orders as ever,
de Mornay replied, acid creeping into his voice.
I will humour you this one time, de Mornay, as a token of goodwill towards the Inquisition, but don't expect anything more from me. Few chapter masters would grant you the privileges I do.
Expect me within the hour.
Azrael cut the link without another word. He knew de Mornay well enough to understand that rebuffing him would only heighten his determination.
Better to lure the fool into the lion's den and show him the consequences of his beliefs firsthand. Below him, Eleazar was describing the intention of the chapter to firebomb Midgardia's surface. The muttering of the assembled commanders showed it was as unpopular among them as it had been with De Mornay. Azrael keyed his personal vox.
"Dismiss them," he ordered Eleazar.
Without showing any sign of having heard Azrael over the link, Eleazar began to bring the briefing to a close.
"De Mornay is here because of us, not the wolves,"
Asmodai said, his voice hissing quietly from the maw of his grim, black skull helm.
"Without a doubt."
"We must keep him at arm's length."
"Have no fear, brother. I intend to."
Below the dais, the 13 Space Marine commanders were departing, each one bowing briefly towards Azrael before they left. Hermaeus of the Knights of the Covenant was the last to exit the bridge, exchanging a curt nod with his supreme Grand Master before passing through the blast doors. Azrael rose and descended from the dais, Asmodai following him like a shadow woven from nightmares.
"Brother Eleazar," Azrael said, "how do you find our brethren's appraisal of the coming operation?"
"Approving, for the most part," the interrogator chaplain said, stepping away from the hollow chart and bowing as Azrael joined him. "Though our decision to bomb Midgardia met with ill feeling, it does not sit well with them to burn the planet with the great wolf still unaccounted for."
"Of course. It is not what I would wish to do, but we have no alternatives. Midgardia's surface is now so infested that only warp spawn could possibly exist down there for any length of time. The entire strength of this crusade would be liquidated if we sought to make planetfall, and we cannot let the warp rifts on the surface grow any further. It must burn, all of it."
"Yes, my lord," Eleazar said. "They will all accept our decision, I have no doubt."
"Sire," Mendaxis interrupted him, "Lord Inquisitor De Mornay Shuttle is requesting docking clearance."
"Granted," Azrael said tersely. "And send Brother Sergeant Elijah to escort him personally. Tell him there are to be no deviations. They are to come straight here."
"Yes, sire."
Azrael glanced at Asmodai.
"A necessary evil, brother," he said.
The Master Interrogator Chaplain didn't reply. Sergeant Elijah brought Lord Inquisitor Banis De Mornay to the bridge, borne aloft on a cushioned vital support palanquin, which was welded to the backs of two tracked servitor units. Behind him came a train of disparate creatures. There was a lithe-looking, black-armoured sister of battle, her eyes staring with fiery intensity from her flame-scarred face. Alongside her was a limping, blue-robed Lex mechanic, borne down by a great stack of data slates and scrolls. Tugging on his rope tails was a long-limbed Jokero, taking in the grim splendour of the rock's bridge with simian fascination. A dead-eyed cherubim wove and darted overhead on buzzing rotor wings, trailing more parchments. Behind them all shuffled an emaciated figure, naked bar a soiled loincloth, its wiry body stitched with scars and stim injection ports. Rather than hands, its arms ended in crudely grafted electroflails, currently trailing inert along the floor. Its head was covered by a red hood and bound by a riveted visor stylized into the shape of the inquisitorial eye. The faint sound of soothing plainsong drifted from its lobe implants.
Azrael grimaced in disgust as he watched the arco-flagellant limping after its owner. "Greetings, Supreme Grand Master," De Mornay called as his palanquin crossed the bridge, rumbling awkwardly around ranked cogitator pews.
As he spoke, the Lex mechanic started to scramble for a free slate and auto-quill.
"You would bring an abomination like that aboard the rock?"
Azrael demanded, eyes still on the arco-flagellant.
"We all do the Emperor's will,"
De Mornay responded. And I've made poor VX-918 here enact that will in many terrible ways down the years. It's good for him to get out.
Emperor's will,
muttered the Lex mechanic, Autoquill now scratching furiously across a data slate.
Your appearance is as sudden as ever, Azrael said dispassionately, and unwelcome. Why are you here, De Mornay?
The arrival of anyone bearing a rosette ought to be sudden, Supreme Grand Master,
the Inquisitor replied, palanquin rocking to a halt before the Dark Angels. He shifted his aging body fractionally, the wires binding him to his moving recliner's life support systems rattling.
And only unwelcome if you have something to hide.
Except for the Sister of Battle, his retinue clustered behind him like a herd of frightened grox calves.
Something to hide,
the Lex mechanic repeated, still writing. Though he remained silent, Azrael could feel Asmodai's anger emanating like the chill of the void beside him.
That doesn't answer my question.
Ah, but I believe it is my prerogative to ask the questions here. The questions,
the Lex mechanic said.
Hush now, Peterkin, De Mornay muttered before continuing. I can sense you are going to make this audience both brief and impolite, so I will speak plainly. Firstly, there are loyal subjects of the Emperor still on the planet below us, the planet you intend to incinerate.
Mass evacuation is unfeasible, Azrael replied. The populace would need to be quarantined and screened en masse for warp taint. There is manifestly neither the time nor the facilities for such actions.
While civilian losses are regrettable,
De Mornay made a point of glancing at Asmodai,
I was referring more to the burning of an entire great company of your fellow Adeptus Astartes.
Firebombing Midgardia will not damage its underground habitats, Azrael said. And that was Grimnar's last recorded location. If, by the Emperor's will, he yet lives, he will be unharmed.
And when he emerges, he'll be stranded in a toxic ash waste.
If you have an alternative suggestion, Lord Inquisitor, by all means, share it. I would have thought that, as a member of his holy orders, you would have rejoiced at the mass annihilation of mankind's darkest foes.
Rest assured, nothing pleases me more,
De Mornay said.
But less so if the victory comes at the price of one of the Imperium's greatest leaders.
I never thought I would live to hear the Inquisition praising Logan Grimnar.
Times can change, Azrael, as can the topic of conversation. What were you doing on Nurades?
Azrael's jaw clenched.
We were purging one of the Emperor's worlds of demonic infestation.
And just how many demons did you banish there? Did the wolves leave any for you? An entire lion's blade strike force deployed to cleanse an infestation that had been wiped out days earlier.
Is this a line of questioning, or just an opportunity for gross insults? Your grudge-bearing does you no credit, De Mornay. I don't need to humor you, not even for a moment.
What were you looking for in the polar ruins, Azrael? What were your scouts guarding?
That squad was inserted ahead of our main strike force. If you have any real questions, De Mornay, I suggest you start by asking the wolves how they died. That is what we first came here to redress.
There is no evidence the wolves have attacked Imperial citizens. Can the same be said of your chapter, Azrael?
Their monsters butchered a squad of my 10th company,
Azrael snapped, his reserve finally eroded.
We have picked footage of it. Shame you don't also have footage of how the sole survivor of said butchering disappeared, De Mornay shot back. And from within the depths of this very fortress monastery, no less. Something here is not what it seems.
The Inquisitor's gaze swung across the bridge, lingering on the communications pit where Mendaxis was bending low to review a spool of data parchment.
Choose your next words carefully, De Mornay.
I smell the reek of the warp here, Azrael.
Beside him, he felt Asmodai shudder at the Inquisitor's damning words. Azrael turned and stilled him with a gesture.
This audience is over, he said. Get off my bridge.
You don't end audiences with the Inquisition, Azrael, De Mornay said. And your bridge is as much a part of the Emperor's realm as anywhere else in the Imperium. There are no jurisdictions here, not for one bearing my seal.
Azrael turned. It was not a sharp movement, neither sudden nor violent, but it was undoubtedly laden with threat. He took a single step forwards, so that even on his palanquin the aged Inquisitor was dwarfed by the angel's armoured form. The vast bridge went suddenly quiet.
I grow tired of your games, Azrael said softly. Your prejudice against my chapter is well known. The mission that brings us here is not only entirely legitimate, it is desperately vital to the fate of the Imperium. We can do without your pathetic past grievances.
I will make my own judgment on that matter, De Mornay said, putting his palanquin into grinding reverse. We shall speak again soon, no doubt.
If we must, Azrael said grimly.
Brother Sergeant Elijah will return you to your shuttle immediately.
As the Inquisitor and his retinue retreated, the voice of Mendaxis clicked again in Azrael's ear.
Sire, we are receiving fresh intelligence from Midgardia.
There was a pause.
Go on.
It would appear that Logan Grimnar...
Mendaxis hesitated again.
What? Speak.
Sire, Logan Grimnar is dead.
7 miles south of the Magma Gates, Midgardia. Midgardia's spores had eaten away the external PICT recorders, so Egil Ironwolf was blind to the firepower of his command tank as it rolled towards its objective. He could well imagine it, though. A stream of assault cannon rounds kicking up spumes of filth from the milky pusbog, bursting shambling, slime-slick plague-bearers like overripe fruit. Swathes of bolt rounds sped from the glowing barrels of Iron Fist's hurricane bolters, smashing through spore trees, lancing plague beasts like boils, and cutting giant flies out of the air. The pitch and roll of the heavy transport added a tale of pulped and crushed weird scum, ground beneath Aquila-stamped tracks. Eagle had witnessed similar sights many times down the centuries, and still it thrilled him. His brethren in the other great companies revelled in the sensation of axe and chainblade chopping meat and bone, and the clash of steel on ceramite. Eagle had always considered his passion similar, but for him, the glory of battle was not only in the muscle behind a blow, but also in the unbending metal that dealt it. Cog, track, bulkhead and burning engine, in the armour of his great company he saw the unstoppable strength and lightning speed of Russ himself. Wrath was so much more potent when it was clad in iron. Perhaps that was why he was pursuing his current course. Iron did not bend, and it did not break, except beneath the most terrible of forces. He would not acknowledge that these weird spawn, these beasts bred from a madman's nightmares, were stronger than he was. He wouldn't give them the privilege of forcing him to abandon his great wolf. He would not bend, and he would not break.
Destination reached, Lord. Torvald's voice crackled over Iron Fist's intercom. Ramps ready to drop on your mark.
As soon as we're clear, rejoin the task force, Egil said.
He glanced back at Conran. Unlike the rest of the Iron Guard, he sat in one of the hull's restraining harnesses, his expression stony.
I will see you aboard the Wolftide, brother, Egil said.
With the Great Wolf, Conran added, nodding. May Russ and the Allfather be with you.
The time for words passed. Egil's servo skull hovered at his shoulder, its tiny anti-gravitic motor buzzing. He checked his armor was properly sealed and banged the disembarkation rune above the Land Raider's forward hatch. It flashed from red to green. Wolf claws slid free, a thought sending energy crackling down the wicked blades. There was a thump of maglocks and a hiss of decompressed air. The ramp fell forwards, and light, sickly and pale, flooded the troop compartment. Egil charged out into the rot jungle, a howl on his lips. 2 seconds to assess his surroundings. Skull looked left. The skull's implanted vidfeed uploaded directly to the Wolf Lord's bionic eye. Egil went right. 10 paces ahead, the corroded remains of the entrance to a Midgardian mineshaft yawned. Iron Fist's Hurricane Bolter sponsons were still hammering. Only a handful of plaguebearers were between the Land Raider and the mine entrance. One died with Egil's claws in its throat, gargling on its own ichor. Moln Stormbrow, the first of Egil's Iron Guard to follow the Wolf Lord from the hatch, pulverized another with a swing of his thunderhammer as it made a clumsy swipe for Skoll.
Into the mine, Egil barked, bursting a squealing nurgling underfoot. Now!
Olaf Ironhide, the final member of the Iron Guard, splashed out into the jungle's quagmire. Iron Fist's ramp immediately began to rise, and the tank was reversing before the opening was even sealed, great tracks throwing up fountains of pestilent, sticky spume. The noble war machine was almost unrecognizable from the outside, drenched in oozing filth, its thick armor plating pockmarked by ichor and spore clouds. The pain its machine spirit must have been suffering caused Egil to bare his fangs beneath his visor as he gutted another droning plaguebearer. With their lord at the center, the Iron Guard sprinted the last few yards to the mine's corroded metal overhang. Egil's autosensors stripped away the darkness within, picking out dead lumen globes and a rudimentary lift mechanism leading down into the mine proper. Its winch and cables, however, had long been eaten away. A servitor controller hardwired into the shaft's activation panel was little more than bones and rusted metal, its vat-grown flesh desiccated by Midgardia's spores.
Borgen, hold them off, Egil ordered. There must be a secondary point of access.
Borgen Fireeye planted himself at the mine's entrance and unleashed his combi flamer on the demons gathering outside, spitting oaths and curses at the weird spawn even as he set their rotting flesh ablaze. The rest of the Iron Guard spread out around the lift chute, hunting for another path downwards. Egil's visor display was already being lit by red flashing runes, telling him the toxic air was eating away at his armor's sealant, while Skoll's gleaming cranium was becoming visibly more pitted and scarred with each passing second. They had to get below ground, and fast.
Here, my Jarl, Bjorn Bloodfist said. A machine ladder running parallel to the lift.
Egil hurried to the Iron Guard's side and saw that he was right. A smaller shaft entrance, including a heavy ferroplas ladder designed for lowering mining machinery, led down into a darkness so deep even the scans of Egil's augmented eye couldn't penetrate it.
Will it hold?
Orvin Heifel asked as they looked at the ladder, the doubt in his voice obvious.
It will have to, Egil said, turning to Moln. Collapse the entrance, he ordered.
Jarl?
Do it. We need to descend, but it will take time. We cannot afford a pursuit.
Moln hefted his hammer and replaced Borgen at the mine's entranceway. As Fireeye checked his weapon's promethium level, Stormbrow swung his crackling weapon at one of the overhang's support beams. The decaying timber gave with a splitting crash, and Moln ducked back just in time to avoid the thunderous fall of the mine's entrance. Eagle already had his feet on the machine ladder's rung clamps. The ferroplast groaned beneath his power-armored bulk, but held. He began to climb downwards. There was no time to think, no time to assess the situation or calculate risk percentages. They had to get below before Midgardia's corrupt atmosphere poisoned them all. And besides, every second wasted was another second not knowing the fate of the great wolf. Mouthing a silent prayer to the Allfather, Eagle led his pack into the darkness of the underworld. The Rock, in high orbit above Midgardia. For the most fleeting of moments, when the Inquisitor had first arrived on the bridge, the thing wearing the flesh of Vox Seneschal Mendaxis had known the closest sensation to fear a creature such as it ever could. The unsettling sensation was soon replaced by the thrill of a close escape. For a second, as the human's eyes had fallen on it, the creature had fancied its flesh would unravel and its demon form would burst into holy flame. The Imperium storytellers would have enjoyed that. The purifying aura of his chosen servant burning away the disguises of the corrupt and scorching their evil plots from existence. The ridiculousness of it almost made the Mendaxis thing giggle out loud. The Inquisitor was just a man, and like all men, he had ultimately failed to see what was right in front of him. It was growing bored in the communication pit. It had been masquerading as the Vox Seneschal since the Crusade fleet had entered the warp, bound for Fenris. But now, with the Inquisitor's departure, Azrael had returned to his bauble throne above, while the bridge busied itself with preparing firing solutions for Midgardia. Briefly, it had toyed with the idea of following the Inquisitor back to his shuttle and killing him and his simpering little herd of sycophants. A void pilot who accidentally opened both airlocks in transit, perhaps, or a tragic carbon monoxide leak in the transport bay. But no. Of the many, many skeins of fate that wove themselves around such undeniably titillating acts, none of them furthered the task the Mendaxis thing was here to complete. It chided itself. There would be time aplenty for such games afterwards. Once the wolf and the lion had torn each other's throats out. Finally, the balance of fate on the bridge changed. The one known as Interrogator Chaplain Eleazar turned from the holo chart he had been scanning and made for one of the bridge's vaulted exit gangways. Azrael was deep in conversation with his skull-helmed Master Interrogator Chaplain, and no one else had the authority to stop the Vox Seneschal. The Mendaxis thing rose from the pit and followed lightly in Eleazar's wake. As it went, it wondered whether any of the labouring menials around it would note that, although it appeared to walk, the body of Mendaxis was in fact floating, a fraction of an inch above the bridge's worn flagstones. Such little touches amused it still further. There really was no cure for mankind's blindness. Eleazar passed through hissing blast doors and left the bridge. The Mendaxis thing slipped after him just before the doors slid shut. Ahead, so real that it seemed to impose itself upon the Mendaxis thing's vision, fate's weave spread, a beautiful, multi-hued tapestry spun by its master. And all the threads that were tied to Eleazar's magboots led him to his private reclusium cell. That much was now inevitable, and the Mendaxis thing felt the gratification of knowing it had locked them both into the correct path. All that remained to do was pick which body it would greet the young Interrogator Chaplain with. The Warp. They would have made him their master. Beast Lord, Wolfheart, the Wild King. They would have crowned him with savagery and robed him with hunger. He refused. He was not like them. Not yet. That truth pained him. He could not deny it. There was something inside, something in all of them that refused to ever be tamed. While the hearth fires burned low, it would rather be hunting in the snow. While weapons lay at rest, it would rather sink fang and claw deep into prey flesh. Even some of those he had known the longest had succumbed to it. Scarpelt and Harrok, Hagmund and Olfar, long fangs and grey pelts all, given over to the beast within. They said the same thing, each one of them. The wolf time was coming. Leadership was needed. Would he join them? That was not his way, he reminded himself, over and over. There was savagery, yes, but it was cold, calculated, unleashed only when the moment was right. The savagery the others now possessed burned bright, was blind to reason. It was the hungry rage that flung the wolf into the huntsman's trap. They were late. The warp was playing its usual tricks, seeking to confound and infuriate them. Fury made the beast stronger. It made more of his warriors turn. They had been bound for the Fenris system for what felt like a lifetime. The other great companies were already there, already fighting, already dying, already writing their sagas on Midgardia, Svelgard, and Frostheim. The thought pushed him even closer to the edge. He took a long, shuddering breath, trying to clear his head. Soon they would be home, whether it would be as beasts or as men, he did not know. There was only one certainty. He would make all those who defiled Fenris pay. That was The Lost King by Robbie McNiven, read by John Banks.